Good evening, dear ones, and welcome. It is a blessing to see each of you on the screen and to welcome you this evening. We begin in the name of the Father and of the Son, and in the name of the Holy Spirit. As it was in the beginning, is now, and will be forever. Amen. We step into our circle and take our place. To rest in a place of great intention, to listen deeply, and to engage in a conscious exchange. And continuing in this season of Eastertide, we endeavor to understand and to embody a resurrected life. What does that look like? Well, for now, we are approaching and beginning with three-centered being. And for our opening reflection, we again turn to Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. As mentioned earlier, Teilhard died on an Easter Sunday, 1955. He was born on May 1st, 1881. So the significant days of his birth and his death occurred during the season of Eastertide. And certainly, if there was a one who embodied a full and resurrected life, it definitely could be Teilhard. He has many works, all of which are published after his death, but he wrote a great deal, even starting very early in his life. As I understand it, one of his first areas of service was to be a stretcher bearer during World War I. And it was during that time that he also wrote prayers. Scattered throughout all of Teilhard's works are various prayers. But this is an excerpt from one of them, one of those very early ones when he was serving as a stretcher bearer and witnessing the range of the human condition. This is his prayer. O God, you are the center where everything meets again and extends on all things to bring them toward yourself. I love you because of the extension of your body in the whole of creation, by grace, life, and matter. Burning like a force, intimate like a life, center towards which everything moves. Deign to make in all of us, if this is possible, a small place. And one by one, from the present chaos, to be grouped slowly in you, in the unity of a new earth. May it be so for us that we have a small place of unity grouped together in order to manifest harmony inside and outside. So now we prepare to enter into our evening in a conscious way. And we are aware that our prosana, our being bodies, encompass realms, visible and invisible, the heights and the depths, the widths and the lengths. We prepare ourselves to be gathered, aware, present. Each of us is here in this particular place and time for a particular reason. We are here as persons and as a collective with purpose. What do I wish for? What am I bringing? What am I contributing? Our wishes matter, as does our being. How we participate matters, for that is what we are emanating to the group, and the group then emanates out into the world. So now we place ourselves, center ourselves once again, in a place of imminent trust and receptivity to life, to the influences pouring forth from the conscious circle of humanity, extending out to all those who are groping for a sense of life. We prepare to receive these influences with high valuation, so that we may digest them with back upright, still, and contained in our own atmosphere, not entangled in the world without. We scan our bodies, particularly the small muscles of the face. Letting go of all tension and constriction. Present. And we breathe in deeply all, every most hidden part of our being. All being. Everything. Everything that passed through us this day, through our world today. Everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope, all affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over complexities, plans, anxieties, small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. Now we enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina. Taking it in as food, these impressions. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And now become aware of how you communicated this very day in your speaking and listening, your affect and gesture, your tone and disposition, your inner states and outer expressions. What comes to mind? Were you able to relate to the world and others in conscious relationship? Did something new manifest? Or was there recurrence? Now remember, love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And now become aware of how you communicated this very day in your speaking and listening, your affect and gesture, your tone and disposition, your inner states and outer expressions. What comes to mind? Were you able to relate to the world and others in conscious relationship? Did something new manifest? Or was there recurrence? Now remember, love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And now become aware of how you communicated this very day in your speaking and listening, your affect and gesture, your tone and disposition, your inner states and outer expressions. What comes to mind? Were you able to relate to the world and others in a conscious relationship? Or did something new manifest? Or was there recurrence? Now remember, love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. Amen. Steve, welcome. Good evening.
Double unmute. Good evening, Marianne. I love this passage, and I love how it's bracketed by our calling to higher levels of being. The first one, love your God with all your might. And then at the end, the Paul's passage about love is patient and kind and forbearing and all of those things. And in between, it's a reminder we get where we get stuck. And it's a nice pairing with the drawing or the painting next to it. But as you know, I'm a one, and we don't tend to blow up much. We tend to seethe. And so, because we want to be in control the situation, and my face betrays me. My Kathy will always say, what's wrong? I said, nothing's wrong. And you've got your mother's face on. and it just betrays me. And so I'm thinking, I know we should align our facial expressions and all that, but it has to start from the inside, because the body will betray you with your facial expressions or how you're holding yourself. So inside out, the top passage, the bottom passage, inner stop, reset the table and try again.
So, amen. Amen. I'm with you, Steve. Michael, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
There were two things about this that struck me. The first was the image. And what struck me about the image was all of the people oriented toward and heading off to the big shiny thing. the God out there, except for one who had found something, perhaps that pearl of great price, or the God within, and had turned away from all of that and was oriented in a different direction. And I thought, boy, that speaks to this path. The other thing regarding that middle paragraph that Steve mentioned is that I had an aim this week. I was in an event one day which was ripe for recurrence with a whole group of people. And my aim was to be third force, to be wholly reconciling, not to know how it should go one way or the other, but to be in that middle place, a different way of perceiving, listening, connecting. And the story is irrelevant, but it was a very useful aim for the day.
Thank you, Michael. I could see how it would be. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim, welcome.
Hi, Marianne. I was struck by the beginning of that passage in "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength." And I was thinking back to when that passage became meaningful to me several years ago. And I remember saying, "Oh Lord, I really want to be able to do that, but I don't know how." And today, when I heard those words and read that passage, a whole new light shone through it. And I read it as "you shall." In other words, this is going to happen. And it's not like, "Jim, go make this happen." This is just going to happen.
Yes.
And I realized that it is just the divine light and the grace that penetrates through the recurrences, shows me these things, and then tries to set me free. And so this divine light, this divine force, I have a rock I picked up out at my property one day, and it's a big piece of limestone. And the reason I picked it up was it was really odd being, being from another part of the country, I'd never seen anything like this before. And what I noticed is that the limestone had a root growing right through its body. And what had happened is a tree root had encountered the limestone, and limestone being porous, it had actually found a little crack, a little pore in the limestone, and found its way all the way through that little pore to the other side. And that speaks to me about this verse, "You shall, you shall, you shall, you will find the light, because I'm a light and I'm in you, and I'm drawing you, and you're drawing me. You just shall." Mm-hmm. So I was struck by that. Thank you.
That's beautiful, Jim. There's a whole other lightness of being in that. This has a whole different feel than previous. Thank you very much. And so, Dennis, we'll take you as our last sharing for this part of our evening. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. From the reading today, I too am a one. And I've been having a difficult week. Some of my aims for this week have been to basically self-observe and non-identify with some situations that I find very triggering. And I was had the day, spent the day today with a person that I've been having coworker issues with. I'm thinking, and we had to drive 6 hours together. I was just praying the whole, you know, preparing for it, that I could recognize and I can begin to feel this in my body when I'm getting triggered. So I'm really actually happy about that. And things went pretty well today, but then looking at, thinking about the reading and the idea about, is there something recurring? Is there something new? And I think for me, some of the things that are recurring are when I notice I'm getting triggered, if I feel like I'm being criticized or blamed or something like that, I get reactive. And so I think about also the email, it talks about listening, manner of communicating, gesture, tone, and disposition, et cetera. And so I'm realizing that I'm self-identifying with some of these things that are going on, and I can see it. I can decrease, I'm beginning to be able to decrease the reactivity, but still there. But overall, I'm feeling that there's progress being made. And this has, of course, been something that's been for a while. So I really enjoyed the reading and the email today.
Thank you so much, Dennis. Mm-hmm. Thank you. What joy to hear all of these sharings. Thanks. Thank you so much to each of you and to all of you, because I know there's thoughts in your hearts. So I am now delighted to welcome Peter, who will lead us into three-centered communication. Welcome. Good evening, Peter.
Good evening, Marianne, and thank you. It's good to see you and good to see everyone on the screen tonight, connected as we are. Before we get into the topic for tonight, which is three-centered communication, and I really appreciate these three men of God sharing. Beautiful to hear men being vulnerable about communication. Let's just review last week. And we were blessed to have Mimi Conroy lead our journey school last Thursday. And it was a special treat, I think, for all of us who remember Mimi leading the Thursday night work class in the sanctuary. And it had been a long time since she has led this Thursday class. So it was just such a treat to feel her energy and presence with us and her love, so, and her joy. And it was a blessing to a lot of us. So she left us with some homework, and the homework was articulated in the email from last week. So we'll just open up the floor to share your experience of kind of reflecting on three-centered love experience. There were two ways of accessing the homework, and probably some of you have talked about this already in your journey groups this week. But in particular, you know, commenting or sharing your understanding of the parable of the horse, carriage, and the driver, and how that relates to three centers and three-centered loving. I particularly thought the question of whose authority is the driver under was a very unique way of getting at what do we mean by the driver? Who or what is the driver? And what are the reins? Curious if anyone has any answers for those questions. And then just to self-observe how you love and observe how you are loved and notice which centers are involved. So I'll stop the share right now, and I don't know if that was even shared. Was that shared? And just someone nod yes or no. The screen?
No, it was not.
Oh, well. Oh, well, I could see it. Yes. Anyway, who would like to share about the homework this week and how those questions landed for you? Start with Cammie, please.
Hi, Peter. Thank you. You know, last week, Mimi brought the metaphor forward of the cat when it rubs against your leg, that it's doing that for itself. That really stuck with me during the week. And then this question of observing how you love. made me take a really critical eye to somewhat of the self-serving nature of my way of showing love. That is it making me feel good because of how I choose to feel love? And is it like stroking my own back? And so I just really examined that, and it was a little bit hard at times. There were times when I recognized the self-serving nature of my love actions. And so then just really trying to be open to in that three-centeredness, in inviting not just the body, feeling that kind of that self-stroking feeling of love, because that's good too. You know, it grew love in me to have to express love in certain ways, but then to stretch myself and to think about how I could move into new ways of stretching myself in love in uncomfortable ways, and to people that I'm not used to extending love to, and not in a self-serving way, but in a very vulnerable way, a new way. And so that's been my work with the homework this week. That's been a good stretch.
Thank you, Cammie. That's really good work, really effective work, applying the ideas. I think all of us, you know, it's easy to love the cat that's loving us. Can we love the cat that's scratching us, and the difficult person? Can we love the difficult person? Can we love our enemy? And that you're getting at that question. And so thank you. Good work. Thank you very much. Frank, please.
I did a lot of thinking about, and have for years thought about, the parable of the horse, carriage, and driver, and its journey towards real I, as I understand it. I've always thought that the reins represented the work, and the connection between the emotions signified by the horse and the driver, along this, the driver's body in the form of the carriage. I know that ultimately, if one becomes fully awake, and I think that right now, the driver is certainly signified by those of us that are not yet fully awake, that are asleep. And the movement towards real I seems to be, it's not direct. It comes as a consequence of a lot of work, and not work pointed towards real I, but rather work that's pointed at oneself. I love that. I love it. I read it not only in that volume, but in the 1300s, where it's repeated again in a different manner. But don't have much more to think about it than I've already stated. But I enjoy the passage.
Thank you, Frank, very much for your sharing your insight on that. Kay, please.
Hi, Peter. I had an interesting and unusual moment of love yesterday. I have a friend who has a paraplegic son, and she needed to take a picture of an unhealed wound on him, but she couldn't wait till the nurse came to help her. And so she asked me to come. And it was just one of the most amazingly loving experiences that I've ever had. Her son is 50 years old, and I'm sure it was difficult for him to have me there. Even though I know him kind of, and I had to touch his body and I watched Barbara do everything she had to do to him. And at one point she gave me a glove and I helped with the wound. And just the vulnerability of Keith, the vulnerability of Barbara, my vulnerability, all of us in that room all together, and no pretenses, no, there just wasn't room for that. There wasn't any place to put that. And just when we were doing it, I just thought, just to be involved in this and invited into this, and to watch Barbara love her son in this way, and for me to be able to show her son love in helping through this difficult time. It was just, I was just speechless when I left. I just didn't know what to say. So anyway, that was my experience. Thanks for listening.
Well, thank you, Kay. Do you mind if I ask you another couple questions?
No.
So good work with that. And so obviously it's so sacred and beautiful when parents are caregivers to adult children, especially children of great special needs or disabilities. It's so sacred. I feel that so Christ is in that so profoundly. But just was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing with the community, if you could observe now from this place right now, backward, was there a primary center you were experiencing that encounter through? Meaning, can you reflect, was it your intellectual, emotional, or instinctive moving center, your body?
Yes, I think it was a lot of my intellectual center, because I had to think about what Barbara was asking me to do, think about how I was handling Keith. But then also a lot of my emotional center, especially towards the end of the experience, just realizing everything that we had done together. And then also my moving center, just holding Keith, making sure I didn't do it too roughly. I did touch him in a place that he was sensitive, and I felt bad about that. And then when I was helping Barbara, like I had to kind of hold the wound a little bit so she could get a good picture. And my hands aren't, I have arthritis, so sometimes it's difficult. And I had to just move my hand how I had to move it, not like she was telling me to move it. So I, you know, it was all centers.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I know that for me, and I think I've heard this from other people too, that when we're interacting with people like in a situation like that, where we're asked to help, that I've experienced the emotion that I would call awkwardness, the awkward Peter who doesn't know what to do, stands in the corner, you know, doesn't take initiative. And so what I've observed is that's my emotional center, you know, functioning or not functioning freely, keeping me from being present and loving because I'm caught in some intellectual part of my emotional center. So thanks for sharing your experience. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, good work. Let's go to Tracy, please.
Hi, Peter.
Hello.
I was inspired by the other sharing on how we experience love in our three centers, and it's been a really interesting exercise. I really appreciated it. I'm man number three, and interestingly enough, as I looked at how I experience love, actually where I can experience it the most cleanly and clearly is through the body, which really surprised me. But, you know, of course there's hugs and touch, but just touching the earth, touching my dog, petting my dog, just an immediate physical experience of love. And I don't know, maybe it's because, you know, the moving center doesn't have a negative part. I don't know. And the emotional center, I feel like I have better discernment around outer parts of centers and inner parts of center. And I can, kind of gauge those inner parts, those higher emotions, more aesthetic emotions. Yeah. But, you know, where I'm easily duped is in the intellectual center. When I think I'm being loving, it's what Cami was describing. It's self-serving. I think I'm loving my children. I think I'm loving my mom by managing them and helping them, right? Remember everything and to take care of themselves. And I can be a real pain in the neck, totally. And I think it's love, but it's not, it's fear. I'm afraid of something happening to them. I'm afraid of, their program for happiness not aligning to mine. And I think I know what's best for them. And then selfish stuff too, just like, I don't want to suffer. I don't want you to suffer because that's going to cause me to suffer. So it's really interesting. And so I think the only time, I think there are a couple things I learned in this. I feel like one of the best things my head can do is to get quiet and allow my heart and my body to manifest. And then the other thing I learned is just bringing in a statement of truth, an affirmation, is a way that the head can be useful in this endeavor. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing those two practical approaches to integrating the head and the body. Yeah. Well, I think you're probably not the only one in the room who, you could say, you love me so well, I hate you. the motivations for our love is so, where is that in the centers? Where are our motivations in our centers? And I suppose maybe they're different for everyone and each center. But that'd be an interesting self-study. Like, where is my motivation in my intellectual center? Where is my motivation in my emotional center? Where is my motivation in my instinctual moving center? I'm aware of some things more than others, but a lot of motivations are underneath the surface in the unconscious. So life tends to show them up. Thank you, Tracy. And we honor all the care and love you bring into the world. Let's go to Max, please.
Thank you, Peter. I'll try to be brief. Regarding my experience of love, I was recalling conversations and engagements with people that I loved and observed that some of the skills and drivers of connection that I've learned over the years of active listening, engaging actively, giving feedback. What am I hearing? What am I sensing their feeling about what's being said? Was giving over to more sensing and listening and just patience to observe. And observe them totally from the heart, the mind, and getting a lot of that feedback from the body. my sense of who the driver is in the parable is that it's the self. It's the false self, and it can be the true self. And this balancing that goes on, or this dynamic that goes on between the ego and the true self. The reins for me have to do with, the mechanisms for influence, control. I thought of the difference between a traditional horseman who is directing the trained horse to do what it wants to do versus the horse whisperer, if you will. You know, someone that's more intuitive and working with the horse. And so the reins can be, you know, continuum of different vehicles for trying to identify with the emotions or observing the emotions. And I'll leave it at that.
Oh, good. I'm writing that down. A continuum of means of working or connecting with the emotions. I think that's good, that the reins are a continuum. It's really good. If the driver...
Well, I would also say that, you know, what came up for me was the book, The Heart of the Trauma, and this connection of the dorsal and the ventral communication systems. And the reins seem to, you know, be part of that conduit, if you will. So there was a lot of great fun things that came up for me with that.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Well, endless connections, but I appreciate you bringing in the brain into the conversation, because I view the, you know, primarily the driver as the intellectual center in the analogy, but if the reins are left and right, I kind of connect those to the left and right hemispheres that interact with the things you just said. So that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that insight. I encourage anyone else who wishes to share that perhaps doesn't regularly share or has never shared to tell us your experience of love in different centers. We'll go to Billy or Brad.
Hey, Peter. This reminded me of something that happened or that I received several years ago from a woman who is a meditation teacher, Buddhist meditation teacher. And she gave me a CD, and I think the name of it is How We Love. I can't remember, where she's talking about different ways of loving. And she mentioned about something that she witnessed where she knew this monk, and there were people coming to see this monk and bringing gifts. And this one person gave him some form of fruit, and thinking that that was a very loving, you know, it was his way of showing love to this monk. But it turns out that this monk was allergic to this piece of fruit. And so the whole idea behind it was what we may think is loving may actually not be, depending on who we're trying to transmit this love to. And it has really reminded me, because I had completely forgotten about that, and it's really reminded me that I have to think, if I know the person, you know, what is meaningful to them? And if my habitual way of showing love is actually love to them, or kind of what Tracy was talking about, if it's just making me feel good about me and thinking I'm being so loving. So anyway, that's it.
Thank you. That's a great illustration of external considering and to be more skillful in our love languages, so to speak, that to know what the love language of the other is, especially our partners and colleagues and spouses. You know, it's so crucial to know their love language. Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you. Don't want to give a gift that makes someone allergic. Jackie, we'll conclude with you, dear, or I guess that could be Lee.
I experienced loving and being loved this past weekend by going to a horse farm with some of my family members. Just being in the beauty of nature, seeing the lush green pastures and woods, helped me to experience the love of God, feeling with my heart open and expanding to people with those around me. I observed how my mind quieted down, my body became still, and how my heart radiated love. In my sharing of these health challenges, my mother-in-law immediately offered to be with me to assist him with care and doctor's appointments. My heart burst with love, and I cried out of gratitude to hear this from a man who was caregiving his own mother who had his Alzheimer's. So that's my story. I was very moved by this young man's gesture of love.
Yes, thank you, Jesse. Beautiful sharing. Well, I think unless someone else feels deeply led to share your experience of observing your love in the different centers, we'll move on to the subject tonight, which is three-centered communication. I'll just give you a moment here. If anyone does feel a burning need to share, I want to give you the moment to do so. Okay, we'll move on then. I'm going to share my screen or attempt to do so. Do someone tell me if it's not working. Okay. Sometimes I hear feedback about the subjects that we cover in the Journey School, and Just wanted to put in a plug to make the work as practical, specific, psychological, and relational that we possibly can, which means that there's not one thing in this universe that's, shall we say, not relevant to hook up to the work ideas. So whatever we're talking about is worthy of putting in relationship to and linking up with a work idea. That's what I believe. And so tonight, the subject of communication, or last week, the subject of love, or in previous weeks, the subject of trauma. All of these things hook up and make the work very practical, specific, psychological, and relational. And the work is uniquely designed to accommodate and help shed light on every human experience and every human state that we can experience. And I believe that very much, that it's a wisdom teaching that sheds light on everything. Well, communication is a big thing, but what we end up having the experience of is a lot of miscommunication. And the problem is that we think it has happened, or that communication is happening or is occurring. And people who make their living communicating, like ministers or teachers, know this very, very well, that you know, many times I think I've said something well or clearly, and it turns out to be just the opposite, or I've said this and someone hears this. And so sometimes I wonder if there is any hope for communicating among human beings, but I do believe that there is. And I've experienced deep communication, not just through words, but also through the silence, just that interior being still with others on retreat. There's a deep communication that happens beyond the words. So what gets in the way oftentimes of clear communication, especially in our closest relationships, whether it's home life or work life, is this work teaching of our multiplicity, that there are different parts of ourselves at the very least, or we have this idea of the doctrine of eyes, that there's not just one eye, like Frank was talking about, the real I, but we're a multiplicity of eyes, different manifestations of Peterness that show up in different contexts. And so how I communicate through one of those voices or ids or alters or expressions of personality might be different than another one. So ideally, we are working at developing a kind of congruency of our being, a unity of our being that heals the fragmentation and the multiplicity of our being. And one of the fundamental problems that the work says human beings have, you know, in Christianity, it's just labeled as sin, but the work breaks it down into very specific things. One of the fundamental problems the work says is that we don't have unity. in ourselves. We're because we're a multiplicity. So if this thing doesn't have unity, well, then my communication is going to show up certainly as full spectrum and a lot of different variations. So as we grow in unity of being and heal the multiplicity, our communication tends to be more focused. And then another aspect that gets in the way of communication and fosters miscommunication is technology and how, you know, we all have written that hasty email and pressed the send button and regret it the next second or the next morning. And certainly we've all received text messages or sent text messages where the tone can't be heard, the facial expression can't be heard, the feeling quality can't be felt, and it's misunderstood or hurtful. And so technology really has complicated the human experience of conscious communication and gets in the way. And so we have to be very skillful about how we use technology these days, especially 7 billion people who are all multiplicities themselves communicating in this kind of third force blind way, which is technology. Or it can be third force blind, much more so than face to face. There are high qualities of technology communication, and in many ways it prevents emotion being expressed sometimes, like versus someone being in person and hitting or yelling or turning red. Technology helps sometimes moderate our expression of negative emotions. Negative emotions is another huge problem that gets in the way of our communication. And the thing about communication and negative emotions and our being quality that comes through our communication is that it's one of the most transparent places other people can see our being. And so anyone who's talking, anyone who's revealing themselves through their words, communication, is revealing their being, maybe not their ultimate level of being, but certainly their state at that moment. Actors and actresses learn a profound skill of knowing how to access another level of being or another state of being outside of their ordinary state of being. And they're acting, they're putting on a mask. They're able to reveal a different quality of persona. And the best actors do this just seamlessly and profoundly. Whereas most of us, if I'm feeling a certain way, there's no way I can hide or pretend or act around it. It just is there. And if I'm feeling that, I'll have to wait an hour or a day before it passes for a different feeling to be revealed. So the bottom line is that communication is a very vulnerable thing for all of us. And in particular, communication is really where negative emotions can seep through the cracks of our being and our polite facades. And I'm sure we've all had experiences where at a cocktail party or chit chat with colleagues, small talk, where you're trying not to communicate a negative emotion, but it comes out sideways or in your tone of voice or just your gesture. Oh, really? You know, this type of thing. And it's very hard to keep this stuff from being seen by others. So it's just part of the way in which communication becomes a very, very clear window to see where you're at and to see where other people are at, which isn't a bad thing. It's actually a beautiful thing, because if you're paying attention, you can see what's going on in a person and be empathetic and reach out in love and say, hey, I notice. By any chance, are you struggling? Or by any chance, are you feeling sick or whatever it might be? Because we communicate through our bodies, through our instinctive moving center, through our emotions, and through our intellectual center. All three centers reveal ourselves. Very practical and very particular is the work of John Gottman. This was in the email today, the link on the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which he uses to predict the likelihood of a breakdown in a relationship to a high degree of accuracy, like 90% accuracy. If these things are happening, if more than one of these things is happening in a relationship, he can predict its demise. These negative emotions show up in a significant amount of our communication when when we are negative, and they are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. I encourage you to get a hold of John Gottman's book or watch some of the videos that are available that detail these four horsemen of the apocalypse: criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. But the thing I wanted to highlight and just put out there for you to ponder is notice, even in the stick drawings of the video, the simple cartoon drawing that they use, notice how every center is revealed in criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. The artists are so brilliant in how they convey just the subtle facial gestures, the subtle affect of voice and tonality, and the subtle movements of the body, and the placement of the hands, and what's happening with the eyes. Everything about the body reveals and communicates our emotions. And it's hard to hide our emotions when it comes to our faces and our bodies. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just we would want to be aware and more self-aware and be able to more consciously choose our affect and expression so that there's correspondence to what we're actually feeling, thinking, and sensing, and then also expressing. There's no shame in expressing an emotion. There's no shame in thinking or sensing in the body an emotion. It's just becoming more aware of it so that this is controlling, or this is choosing how I manifest versus just it manifesting through me. And these negative emotions of the four horsemen are very, very common in communication and relationships. Criticism obviously is very self-evident. The problem is when it's consistently criticism, there's consistent criticism about your person. And this, he says, has zero place in any relationship. If there is criticism in a marriage or a relationship, it is surely very, very problematic. If you can't feel safe in a relationship because you're criticized, especially if you're criticized for your, shall we say, parts of your being that you can't really change. When someone criticizes you for you, not just your behavior, like, for example, you're too short or you're too tall. Well, that's a quality of your being that you can't change. And I think what you can understand that criticism can be absolutely toxic in terms of how we communicate to our partners and loved ones. Contempt is a little more subtle, but it can come across in very, very sideways actions verbally, especially when it's fuming for a long period of time. It can just blow up in the most unhelpful of ways. Defensiveness is a similar kind of dynamic where, no, I don't. What are you talking about? These types of instant reactions that block what someone else is saying and don't give any validation by way of your communication to what they're saying. It's very, very common in relationships. And of course, stonewalling is basically the silent treatment, which is a choice of communication by not communicating, and it's very, very controlling. Someone who stonewalls controls the relationship, truthfully. Someone who's not communicating, who's withholding or passive aggressive, they're controlling the relationship by their silence. And that's equally unhealthy and dysfunctional communication. And all this is what the work would call negative emotions. None of this is detailed in the commentaries. But I made a list, I went through the index of the commentaries preparing for this tonight. And if you've never gone through the index, the sixth volume of the commentaries, it's one of those very sweet treasures to just get refreshed very, very quickly with the vast breadth of the work and its ideas. But just under the letter A, the letter C does not have any word called communication. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk about the problem of communication in the work. Just under the letter of A, you see all sorts of things that the work in Maurice Nicol talks about: acceptance of oneself, accidents, accounts, acting, holding an aim, animal magnetism, anxiety, arguing, arrogance, associations, attention, and attitudes. This is just a brief sampling of all the very specific and practical and psychological behaviors that the work speaks about. And I think communication is just another one of them, including these very negative common emotions in relationships and how we communicate with others. And lastly, when it comes to the negative thing, angry, hateful, violent communication obviously can erupt, especially when alcohol or substance abuse is involved, or when abuse is happening in a relationship. But we see this oftentimes when people start talking about things like religion, politics. People can instantly go to very angry, hateful, violent communication. And you can feel that in your body. You can feel that in that they're communicating not just with their emotional center, but sometimes they're communicating with their very low instinctive center, low chakras that are being contorted emotionally with great negative energy, angry, hateful, violent communication. And this can be done verbally and non-verbally, and it can even be done, obviously, physically. So communication is a big area to work on and to become more conscious about how we're communicating. Another aspect of communication that the work speaks about and that the work shines light on is this falseness, the way we communicate what the work calls the outer parts of centers or more superficial parts of our operations as intellectually, emotionally, or physically, that we're really not there on a physical level. We're just kind of, our presence isn't there, or emotion that we're really not there or invested. We're not vulnerable, or intellectually, we're just thinking about other things, or we're just lazy intellectually. And so our falseness of communication shows up in all sorts of ways, that, like when we are lazy or tired or just unwilling to reveal ourselves, or when we feel scared to reveal ourselves, or we don't know, we feel insecure about showing up. We don't know how to show up in a different context or in a different new job, for example. And so we just give in to the small talk, which is oftentimes stupid and meaningless and sometimes crass. We give in to the jokes and we repeat the jokes. You know, if you want to tell a joke, get ready to hear somebody's joke, because they say that 99% of the time you tell a joke, the response is someone else tells their joke. Whereas if you tell a story, chances are people will listen and they will take that story in and they won't feel a need to tell their story. Oftentimes, they'll just be moved by what you say. So jokes are a surefire way of just remaining very superficial and just drawing like draws to light. You just keep pulling out more jokes and jokes continue. Talking about the weather, for example, classic, you know, everyone where I'm from in Wisconsin, you know, the first thing you say is hi. And then the second thing is, how's the weather? So I don't know why that is, but it certainly is that falseness of the outer part of the center that gets in the way of vulnerabilities. It's also kind of comforting. I will say, you know, that superficial level is comforting because you don't just want to jump in and share your heart sometimes. Sports, it's another big one that people just get, you know, it's comfortable to just talk about sports. Well, we can't talk about religion or politics. So people talk about sports or music or the culture, A influences. And so it's just an easy way to relate to people. And like several of us were saying tonight, you know, you meet them where they are. You don't love a person in the way you want to love them. You love them in the way they want to be loved. So a lot of times, you know, true love is showing up and being able to talk about a sports team, even though you don't like the sports team. So that would be loving communication for someone who loves sports. And then, of course, the mindless repetition of cliches, which just to begin to grow more aware of the cliches that are coming out of your mouth is very helpful. And just to hear the mechanical repetition of statements that you make and to catch yourself in it. It's very useful to do work on yourself and to say, I'm going to self-observe how I'm talking. I'm going to self-observe what I say literally in the moment. And it's very, very useful. For example, I observe myself saying the word beautiful all the time. I hear beautiful, beautiful, beautiful all the time. When I greet people, I know that I say, hey, good to see you. I consciously say that, but I also know that it's somewhat of a repetition. It can be very unconscious. But there are lots of ways we say things that are embedded into the mechanical nature of our communication. No kidding. Isn't that interesting? You know, these little phrases that come out that move conversations along, but they tend to be quite mindless. Of course, this is what the work calls the false self, or what I like to call the surface self, the non-authentic parts of ourselves. Max was talking about real I, and someone else was talking about real I. And I think of real I, you know, if you build a sandcastle on the shore of the ocean, all our eyes just keep getting swept away. So real I will never be found. You have to look for real I underneath. It's the foundation. It's the rock underneath the sand. Real I will never be found in the sand. It's underneath. It's the rock underneath the foundation. And that surface self is useful, but also can be very meaningless for people, and a place where you know, our communication shows up as being not real or authentic. And we can also see our multiplicity there. And we can also see the need for the development of this more real part of ourselves, the wish to no longer be a multiplicity, but to have this gravity of being, this oneness of mind and emotion and body. And then finally, when it comes to falseness, the ways of communicating using lies or gossip tends to be oftentimes a go-to for people in our culture. But this also is a good place to see where negative emotions rule the world and how that emotional center hooks into lying and gossiping. And I would say more than any place, you can see that gossip as a part of the emotional center, the negative part of the emotional center. Lying could also be the intellectual part of the emotional center in a very negative way, but very conniving, very, very evil geniuses can use lying in powerful ways. It's very interesting to see the centers when it comes to these forms of communication, lying and gossip. But before I go on to just the conclusion tonight, I want to stop and just briefly give opportunity for anyone to share what you're hearing or what's landing for you, anything coming up for you that someone wishes to share, and we'll just take a moment to pause. Let's go ahead and raise your hand. Karen, please.
Hello, Peter and everyone. Oh boy. Talk about hitting the nail on the head. For the past at least 3 years or so, dealing with COVID, dealing with being an older person, dealing with computers and people who are very adept at using these new pieces of equipment and speaking differently as the younger generations are. Boy, did I get a very rude awakening as far as what do I say to these people? How much don't I know? And, you know, with the medical people, it's I'm expecting them to tell me what the problem is, and they don't tell me. Then I get very emotional. My emotional center got very hot. So I have learned that through compassion and loving myself more, I picked up learning different words. What are the words that are connected with being kind? What are the words that are connected with asking an open-ended question? What are the words? And I find I didn't have the words. I could have plenty of words that could say how angry I was or this, that, or the other thing. But I wasn't used to speaking in the way of kindness, caring, or asking in a kind way asking others about what I need. And if I can't ask kindly for what I need, I probably won't get it. And this has just been a real practice, a very humbling practice.
And yeah, thank you.
At what I don't know.
Thank you, Karen, for that vulnerability. I think that speaks for a lot of us. I completely understand what you're saying. I have had to study and seek and ask, look for different examples of how to communicate better, differently. So we don't have the words. Other people can help us, show us how to do that. And we'll move now to one who has done an amazing mission in life to help us all communicate more consciously and clearly. And if you're looking for tools to do this, look no further than Marshall Rosenberg. We'll get to that in a second. But cultivating peaceful, conscious, and loving listening and speaking skills, because it's not just communication, isn't just learning how we should talk or not talk to people. It's also learning how to listen consciously and more intentively and more, shall we say, purposefully listen, not just passively listen. The work practice of self-observation, particularly observing all three of our centers, just being aware of the being body and while we're speaking and while we're listening. Just do that. Do that for a week. You know, self-observe yourself talking, self-observe yourself listening, and see what you see. Non-critically self-observe yourself listening or talking. It's so, so instructive. You can be present as you're listening to yourself. If you can't be present as you're listening to yourself, you know, you need to build your self-observation muscle. But you can do that, just do it in small little bits. But we all can do this if we make a wish for it. We all can do this. It doesn't take any spiritual genius to do this. You can just do it for just a moment, but you can catch yourself in the moment listening or talking. But like I said, you might not be able to keep that sustained, but that's okay. Just a few moments of observing yourself is worth a lot. And this goes for everybody. I'm talking to people who've been in the work for a long time. I hear people who have been in the work for decades communicate very unconsciously, very unlovingly, very mechanically. I can see that they're not listening. I can see that they're responding to one center instead of all of their centers. I can see this in myself, I can see this in others, you can see this in me, you can see this in yourself. So, you know, the work just doesn't give you a magic wand when it comes to these very nuanced aspects of expressing consciousness, that is through communication. This is a lifelong practice that we get to discover. The second major principle the work teaches us is to practice non-identification or inner separation from things that are coming in to us that someone might be communicating to us that we would normally want to react with anger, like Karen was just saying. You know, you're talking to the nurse and the nurse condescends to you and you want to just say, who's paying the bill here? You know, what gives? You know, so to practice non-identification or create that inner space from what you're feeling and experiencing and call it something, this is called hearing a nurse condescend to me. This is called listening to a nurse who's probably frustrated with me versus personalizing it. This is simply called listening to someone I don't know very well and I'm not understanding. So that one little phrase, this is called from that, is just that wonderful inner separation, and you can practice that on the fly. That paragraph that's captured from Maurice Nichols' commentaries in the email that came out today. Just read that paragraph and it tells you exactly how to do this in detail, beautiful detail. There's the word beautiful. Use I statements. And this is very important. And you can listen for people when they are angry or expressing a negative emotion. Very often the first word is out of their mouth. You are so you, they say you. And so, you know, learning how to communicate more consciously using I statements, owning what works for you and what doesn't work for you, and saying that in a loving, kind way takes practice. Now, Marshall Rosenberg has done, I think, significant work in this very important subject of communication. His theory of nonviolent communication is well known. Many of you probably are familiar with it. But if not, you should check him out. The method is very simple, although it can be complex to try and kind of, you can trip over yourself when you're trying to do this with someone. But if you're in a relationship, to try and do this is very useful, but you can also do this when someone doesn't even know you're doing it. But I highly recommend reading his book. But the four steps are basically observation, feeling, need, request. You share your observation, you share your feelings, you share your need, you share your request. And it goes like this. Here's the observation. Notice how it doesn't start with you. In our meeting today, I noticed you were looking at your phone while I was presenting. Step one, making an observation. In our meeting today, it's very specific, it's time bound. It's not you always, it's in our meeting today, I noticed you, there's the final you, you were doing something. You were fill in the blank of behavior that you're having an observation of. Then the next step is you state your feelings that you have about that behavior you saw. In our meeting today, I noticed you were looking at your phone while I was presenting. I felt ignored. That's the feeling statement. That's really the hardest thing to really get in contact with and to communicate with someone, what you're really feeling. And then, because I need to feel my opinion matters, this is the heart of what drives the feeling, or why we care about the feeling, because of this need underneath the feeling. Because I need to feel my opinion matters. Then the fourth step is the request. Can you not text on your phone when I'm talking in the meeting next week? So it's very specific, and I can't go into detail, but this is a very conscious method. And you can take bits and pieces of it and use it. You don't have to use all of it. And it works just, in fact, it's even more so important to do the reverse, which is the listening side of this. This is the speaking side of it listed here. But the listening side of it then goes like this. In our meeting today, I was texting while you were presenting, and you felt ignored. You have a need to know that your opinion matters, and you're asking me not to text on my phone when you're talking in the meeting. So that's conscious listening. I just repeated back to the person what they have consciously communicated to me. So it's very profound method, and I think this has been informed by the principles of the work and helps evolve the work in very specific ways. I've sat in meetings and hear people say what they think about something, a very important subject. And it's a beautiful statement they make. I want to do this. I think we should do this. And they stop. And then the next person says, well, I think it should be this, and I really like this. And they never indicate that they were listening to what the other person said. Now, they may have heard what the other person said, but no one in the room knows it. And so one of the ways I think we can all do this is by mirroring back to the people that are talking, especially when it involves emotional content that's being shared. Thank you for sharing. I heard that you are feeling X, Y, Z, or I heard that you're concerned about X, Y, Z. It's very, very useful and builds a lot of trust when people know that they're being heard, not just that they're waiting to stop so that the other person can start sharing. Lastly, our homework for next week. And this is, I think, is really interesting work for all of us, is to choose a past conflict, not necessarily a present conflict, but to choose a past conflict that began with a communication breakdown. See if you can find something in your memory where this happened and review your role in the miscommunication or conflict. Notice which centers were involved. Study yourself. And this is really important, to notice which center is involved in the conflict that was related to a break communication breakdown. Maybe it happened yesterday, or maybe it happened 10 years ago, but see what you can see and talk about it in your journey groups with your work partners, and be prepared to talk about it next week. And then lastly, observe how you communicate over the course of multiple conversations with the same person or different people. It's really good. Self-study, notice your patterns of communication. Notice which words you keep coming back to, your tone, your affect, your gestures. Notice what's going on in you while you're talking to the same person. In what way are you the common denominator? It's a wonderful question. How are you showing up the same in different relationships or with the same person? Well, friends, that's all for me. We'll turn it over. I see that Alan has his hand up, but we'll go to Marianne at this point.
Thank you, Peter. That's very useful work. You know, I look forward to engaging all of these practices over the coming days. Thank you. So we have a closing word from Rodney Collin that perhaps also sheds light on this topic. He says, we are like radios. The moment we are negative, we may tune in to the accumulated negativeness of someone, perhaps thousands of miles distant, who has been negative for years. There are many, many different wavelengths, but there is always someone who has the same wavelength as your own, whom we affect and who affects us if we let them. That is one reason why it is so very necessary to guard against being negative, in order not to collect the negativeness of other people and add it to our own. And think of the responsibility if we send negativeness to someone else. It just might be someone who is just getting out of a negative state and whom we push back again by our negativeness. So let us join together in praying aloud wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.